The Reconciliation of Science and Religion, or Lack Thereof, by D. Read by Annalise O'Ten. Fandom, Welcome to Night Vale. Pairing, Carlos Cecil. Rating, Teen and Up. Summary. Carlos doesn't know what Cecil is, but maybe it doesn't matter. Also, Cecil's show gets a special guest. 1. Over time, Carlos has managed to categorize three distinct types of secrets within the greater Night Vale community. The first are secrets everyone knows about, and pretends they don't. Things like the Angels and the Dog Park. Big, ostentatious, outrageous things the Carlos of 2 years ago would have scoffed at on principle. Things the Carlos of 1 year ago had been obsessed with, for a time. Had tried to observe and record and document and expose, until he'd realized what a waste of time it all was. Class 1 secrets in Night Vale were tourist attractions, town gossip, quaint little anachronistic customs handed down through the generations, chanted ominously over bloodstone circles by parents to their children. Local color, but not things for Carlos. The second type of secrets, Carlos has discovered, aren't secrets at all. Things that look like secrets, that have the shape and weight and texture of secrets, but, nonetheless, aren't. Things like the old religion. Carlos had spent days at Bloodstone Circle in Grove Park once, furiously taking photographs and tapping out thousands of words of notes on his iPad, until a local resident had asked what he'd been doing. Then, once Carlos had explained, had proceeded to spend the next 4 hours demonstrating all the chants and sacrifices. Bloodstone circles, Carlos had decided, were a Class 2 secret. Class 2 secrets being most often categorized by the expression, "Oh, well, you didn't ask, so we just assumed you knew." Nowadays, with over a year of Night Vale experience under his strangely textured but locally made belt, Carlos likes to think he only spends his time on the real stuff. The Class 3 secrets. The stuff no one talks about because no one knows. The stuff Carlos is determined to explain. Or at least document. Or defeat. Or something. Anyway, he thinks he's getting pretty good at it, all things considered, even if he still can't figure out which class of secret best fits Cecil. 2. "I just want you to be careful, that's all." "Oh, Carlos, you worry too much. I filled in all the forms, performed all the sacrifices. It's fine. It'll be good for the town to bring in some outside discussion. Cultural." Cecil's off-air voice isn't much like the one he uses on. It's lighter, for a start, more lilting and expressive. Carlos likes it, usually. Carlos likes all of Cecil's voices, but this one in particular. If only because he's one of the few who gets to hear it more often than the alternative. Everyone hears the voice of Night Vale every day, but only Carlos, sitting at the kitchen island eating toast, gets to listen to Cecil. Even when Cecil isn't listening back. "I'm not worried about—" Carlos starts, then stops, wonders what his point is, decides there isn't one, and finishes, "Well, I'm sure it'll be fine." Today, for the first time in the history of Night Vale Community Radio, the religion segment has a special guest speaker. His name is, allegedly, Father Jackson, and he arrived in town 3 days ago. Carlos met him yesterday at the station, discussing his impending interview with Cecil. Cecil had done the introductions in his usual half-endearing, half-humiliating, yet wholly sincere, "dear sweet Carlos" sort of way, and Carlos had exchanged handshakes with Jackson, who'd smiled and been entirely pleasant, and Carlos's skin had felt like it was trying to crawl backwards over his skull. And not in the regular Night Vale way, either. Sorry, what church are you a father of? Carlos had asked. Jackson, who certainly dressed in all the standard long black robes and rosaries Carlos associated with the religious, had smiled placidly and said,
Oh, a little of this, a little of that. God is everywhere, after all.
Carlos, avowed atheist since age 14, had kept his opinions to himself. This morning across the kitchen, Cecil is the perfect picture of boyish excitement. He doesn't get many guests on the show, Carlos knows, and so Carlos also knows he should be happy for Cecil. Cecil, who might not be the sharpest voice on the air, his smooth, velvety softness being, in fact, a great part of his appeal, but nonetheless takes the responsibilities of community radio host with the sort of dedicated seriousness that would make a Navy SEAL weep. So Carlos swallows his worry and opens his arms. Come here, he says, and Cecil does, because it's Carlos who asked. I'm sure it'll be great. Cecil gives the sort of grin that could crack the black heart of hell itself, and Carlos has to taste it. For science. And also for himself. One of Cecil's hands around his waist, the other threading through Carlos's hair. The rest slowly tracing over the raised nodules of his spine. Just another day in Night Vale. He's sure Cecil will be fine. 3. There was a reason it took a year for them to date. Carlos thinks of it as his acclimation year. The 12 months he needed to get used to Night Vale's Night Valiness. It's not like he's so oblivious he didn't know. Not with Cecil announcing his adoration every second day to the whole town. Everyone knew. Even Carlos, buried in his lab. And in those first few weeks, Carlos had almost thought, why not? Almost. It's not that Cecil's bad-looking. Not exactly handsome, either, but, well, that's Cecil. Carlos has never before met anyone so aptly described by negative space. Cecil, who isn't tall or short, isn't fat and isn't thin, isn't handsome and isn't hideous, is, in fact, sort of as if some vague yet menacing government agency had pieced together a man made out of pure mathematical averages. Or, perhaps, as if as a boy, Cecil had done some awful Faustian deal with dark and nameless entities, trading every memorable physical attribute for his beautiful velvet voice. So Carlos had definitely considered things, initially. Had almost gotten as far as a date, even. Except, it'd been night. They'd been standing outside the radio station underneath the blinking light. In the flashes, he'd seen Cecil, who'd been talking, babbling something about coffee and weekend plans, and in between them, darkness. Except Carlos's eyes had drifted, and the lights had strobed, and suddenly in Cecil's shadow he'd seen. He'd hurried home pretty quickly, all thoughts of dates forgotten. Back in the days when brief glimpses of unfathomable horrors still used to give him nightmares. After all that, things had been a little awkward. Cecil was still Cecil, except now Carlos had seen what he'd seen. He kept seeing it. Never straight on, never in a way he could describe. Just impressions, shadows, flickers in the corner of his eye. Because Cecil was still Cecil. But Cecil was the voice of Night Vale, too. And Carlos had started to get the feeling that the title was maybe something more than just a PR catchphrase. He'd been terrified, at first. But then a year happened, and Night Vale, and a lot of things had changed, but not, as it happened, Cecil's wistful admiration or his heart-wrenching sincerity. And then, suddenly, Carlos had found himself on the floor beneath the bowling alley, people swarming all around, tiny, violent, heavily armed people, facing down his own mortality, and all he could think was, "I never even gave it a chance." So what if Cecil was some mind-shattering eldritch horror, thinly held beneath the frail mask of a man? He seemed like a pretty nice guy, and Carlos lived in Nightvale now. What was he? A bigot? Later, sitting on his car, looking at the lights above the Arby's, Carlos had put his hand on Cecil's knee, and Cecil had put his head on Carlos's shoulder, then wound a limb around his waist. Both hands had still been folded in his lap. The interview goes pretty well, for the first half. Carlos listens from his lab, because he always does, and Father Jackson babbles deepities in his too big, too harsh voice, and it's all so very tedious that Carlos can even hear Cecil begin to fray. They're talking about the inherent purpose of human life, or lack thereof, when things go bad. Father Jackson talks about the will of God. Cecil mentions something about which god, har har, and perhaps with so many vengeful deities to dodge, meaning might be better found in the brief and fragile connections made when two hearts or two minds meet within the darkness. Then Jackson is scoffing, saying something about demons, voice raising into a howl that strains the speakers of Carlos's radio. Cecil tries to say something soothing, but then Jackson is shrieking about witchcraft and spells and curses sent across the airwaves. Then there's a crash, and Cecil says, What are you doing? Then he screams, and the radio disintegrates into 1,000 writhing black and eyeless worms. Carlos doesn't notice. He's already out the door. 5. It's not that he's never seen Cecil's other parts. Not really. Half glimpses in the darkness, in mirrors and the corner of his eye. Whenever Carlos looks at Cecil, straight on, he looks human and nothing else. But Carlos has felt the other parts. Often. The brush of boneless, writhing limbs snaking between the cracks behind the world, curling around Carlos, pulling him closer. They'd taken things slowly at first. The extra limbs are a part of Cecil, and Carlos doesn't believe Cecil wants to harm him. But this is Nightvale. Here, words like wants to or harm can take on different meanings. So they took things slow, and Carlos kept a careful journal. On his iPad, not in a book, of course. Checking his skin diligently for any change in hue or texture. Counting limbs. Monitoring his moods. Nothing changed. Except the mood, but that was well within expected parameters, given the circumstances. Carlos still doesn't know what Cecil is. Not exactly. But he does know that he's in love.
6. There's panic in the station when Carlos bursts through the door, interns screaming everywhere, and Carlos doesn't know if it's because the door to the studio is locked, or because everything is covered in black eyeless worms, or because station management is howling outrage and pounding on its door. Carlos doesn't know, and right now he doesn't care.
"Carlos!" screams an intern. Carlos hasn't seen her before, but that's not exactly unusual. "Get the door open!" From the recording booth, Carlos can hear chanting in what might be Latin. An exorcism. He can also hear Cecil screaming. It's not a human scream.
"The door's locked! We're trying to find the keys!"
"Cecil doesn't have time for keys!"
There's a window between the studio and Cecil's booth. Right now, it's crawling with worms, and Carlos can't see through it.
He can break it, though, picking up a chair and hurling it against the glass over and over until it cracks and then finally shatters. Inside, Carlos sees... "Get away from him, you monster!"
Father Jackson turns, just enough to look at Carlos. His hands are raised, one holding a book, the other making some sort of sign. He's chanting, hair and beard whipping in the blasphemous wind summoned by the agonized howling of the voice of Nightvale.
"Stay back, boy," Jackson cries between his chants. "I will have this demon out. Your lover will be saved."
Carlos growls, leaping through the shattered window, feeling knives of broken glass slash red ribbons in his hands and thighs.
"Damn right he will be," Carlos yells.
The recording booth isn't large, just a few steps until he's standing right in front of Jackson, fist raised.
"Welcome to Nightvale, asshole. Now eat hot, knuckly science."
Carlos is a scientist, not a boxer, and he feels something shatter in his fist when it connects with Jackson's face. He feels something shatter there, too, and Jackson drops. Carlos doesn't follow him down. Instead, lunges over the desk, to the writhing mass of flailing darkness and rolling obsidian eyes that's currently slumped in the corner behind Cecil's fallen chair.
"Cecil!"
Carlos drops to the floor, careful not to tread on any tendrils, and grabs something he thinks might be, A, shoulders, and B, safe for him to physically touch. He feels his hands passing through dimensions as he does, but, in the end, what he feels beneath his grasp is nothing but the well-washed cotton of the shirt Cecil pulled out of the hamper this morning. A dozen mismatched eyes roll Carlos's way, 100 gaping maws opening to say,
Carlos?
Carlos slumps in relief, pulling himself closer, pulling Cecil closer. Somewhere behind them, Carlos is dimly aware of the sounds of the sheriff's secret police, newly arrived on the scene and going through the motions of arresting Father Jackson. Unprovoked, unlicensed exorcisms are considered aggravated assault in Nightvale. That's a Class 2 secret. "Cecil. Cecil, are you okay?" Carlos pulls far back enough to look, but his eyes keep sliding away from Cecil's skin, vision falling off like soy sauce from a well-cared Teflon wok. Beneath his hands, Cecil seems unharmed. His heart is racing, his breath is pained and heavy, but he doesn't seem injured. At least, not that body. Carlos is shamed to realize he doesn't even know how to tell about the rest of it.
"Carlos, my beautiful, perfect, heroic Carlos.
The voice feels like a cheese grater dragged across Carlos's soul, but the words are pure Cecil.
I knew you would save me.
Carlos laughs, leaning closer to where he feels a dozen boneless limbs wind around his waist and through his hair. "Uh-huh," he says. "Now I know you're fine, if you're going to be melodramatic." He kisses something that might be a cheek, or a mouth, or hopefully not an eye, if nothing else. At the edge of his vision, he sees a shimmer. The blown-open brains of reality, folding into themselves once more. As they do, they take the shifting, lightless mass of Cecil with them.
Carlos, I feel strange.
"Yeah," Carlos says. "Yeah, I'll bet." Blown open, caught between dimensions, Carlos isn't even sure Cecil realizes what he is. Not really. At least, he's never given Carlos any indication he thinks of himself as anything other than human. Not that Carlos has ever so much as outright asked, so maybe it's a Class 2 secret. If Cecil himself doesn't know, then maybe it's a Class 3. But maybe only to Cecil, judging from the faces of the station staff, peering through the broken window. Carlos gives them a tight smile, then a thumbs up. They return, both nodding in relief, and Carlos is about to say something when he notices the on-air light is still glowing. He pulls Cecil closer, drawing a half a dozen closed eyes back into waking as he hisses, "Cecil, Cecil, we're still on air. We're still recording." Half the equipment is worms, but nonetheless, the microphone seems undamaged. What do I do?
Give me a moment, I'll...
Carlos feels the mass around him try to move. Try and fail, slumping back against the wall with a pained...
Ow!
Right, Carlos says, scrambling upright. Right, I'll just... On the desk, the microphone looms. Carlos leans towards it, clears his throat. Hello, listeners. It's Carlos here. The scientist? There's been a bit of an accident in the studio. Everything's okay now, but Cecil... Carlos shoots a look behind him. Cecil has one leg and one arm back, but he still looks a little out of it. Your usual voice of Night Vale is okay, and we'll be back with you in just a moment. Carlos blinks, eyes scanning across the desk, frantic for ideas. When he finds it, he has to smile, and when he speaks again, his voice is steady. "But first," he says, "I give you the weather." The end. Thanks for listening. This author would like to thank Hana Nobira, Rena Jenkins, The Muse Calliope, Anna Unfolding, Rhea 314, Kansu Ame, The Other Shiroki, and Jelazikazone for providing their voices for this podfic. This author would also like to thank the lovely Katie Hart for agreeing and contributing to making this simultaneous repod possible.